Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which believes great beer can be as exciting as great music. Since 1988, Goose Island has been committed to that belief by brewing new styles of beer like 312 Urban Wheat Ale, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Bourbon County Stout. Goose Island, to what's next? GooseIsland.com.
This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, later in the show, we are going to deal with the world of jazz from the perspective of rock fans. You know, when I was a kid growing up across the Hudson River from Manhattan, I had some great experience. I could see Art Blakey play in the Village. I got to see Les Paul. I don't think I appreciated it at the time. Jazz kind of hurt my little brain.
Well, if we got a show for you, Jim, we're going to help you out and a lot of other people who are in the same boat in terms of coming to jazz from a rock perspective. That's going to be later on, but first we've got some music news.
That is the Norwegian pop phenom A-ha. Greg, I think I have trouble even thinking of another band from Norway ever. Why are we playing a group from that country? Norway made international news. It's going to become, in 2017, the first country in the world to permanently turn off FM radio, to stop broadcasts on what's called terrestrial radio in favor of digital radio. Now, Norway only has 5 FM radio stations right now. They've already got 22 national stations on digital radio, but the Ministry of Culture in that country is saying this is a move that will allow Norwegians to access, quote, more diverse and pluralistic radio content and enjoy better sound quality. The reason this is interesting is people are saying eventually around the world, every country is going to get rid of its terrestrial radio, its AM and FM. In America, something like 90% of people still listen to AM or FM radio at least once a year. You know, obviously I have a real fondness for FM radio, he said, on the FM radio broadcast as well as the podcast. I don't know how I feel about this digital future.
Cuando no la llamo, siempre me hace reclamo. Discutimos, peleamos. Pero llego a casa en la noche, la molesto y arreglamos.
That is J Balvin, the Colombian artist who is currently topping the Billboard Latin charts. And the reason we're bringing it up, Jim, is that the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry has just issued its year-end report for 2014. And we're talking about a big musical world out there. You know, in terms of the United States, we tend to be a bit myopic. We tend to think that everything that happens in the music industry revolves around the United States and really don't pay attention to trends around the world. But it's interesting to note that in countries throughout Latin America, music is booming. The picture sometimes we get in the U.S. is that, well, things are topsy-turvy and digital's dominating physical sales. In Latin America, the trend is exactly the opposite. Fourth consecutive year, Latin America is the fastest growing region for music sales worldwide. Revenue rose 7.3% in the last year, and overall digital revenue was up 32%. The fascinating aspect of physical supposedly dying, physical product dying in the United States, that trend is contradicted throughout the world. Japan and Germany, physical sales were up 78% and 70%. Global vinyl sales, a massive 55% increase in vinyl sales. So physical product is still very much alive and well outside of the United States. And we've done a bunch of stories, Jim, in recent years about China being this hotbed for bootleggers. Well, it's starting to pick up. It's the most populous country in the world. It only ranks number 19 in the music industry because of all this piracy going on. But there are signs that China is finally developing a genuine music economy. The sales of music were up 5.6% in the last year, topping 100 million for the first time. Digital revenue was up to 91 million over the previous year's 82 million. There are a lot of people who are talking about the key to the music industry turnaround as being in China, and there are signs that it is happening now. So there's a lot of stuff happening in the world outside of the U.S. The U.S. is still the largest music market, 4.9 billion in sales. But Japan's music economy is twice the size of what the UK is. You're looking at great markets in Germany, France, Australia, Canada. There are other markets out there where the music industry is booming, contrary to what's happening in the United States. And this latest report by the IFPI totally underlines that. You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and that's Freddie Freeloader from Miles Davis's 1959 album Kind of Blue. That's the best-selling jazz record of all time. Now, if you're a rock fan and you own only one jazz album, that's probably going to be it.
But a lot of listeners who'd like to dive deeper into jazz don't know where to go from there. And I can certainly sympathize, because it took me a long time to get into jazz. Some people find it intimidating and highbrow. Other people think it's old-fashioned and staid and boring. And some people will be permanently scarred forever for mistaking something like Kenny G for jazz. It ain't. If you can put all that behind you and find a way in, jazz is one of the most exciting and rewarding experiences in all of music. And most importantly for us, it can help you better appreciate rock and pop.
Maybe the biggest obstacle is there's so much jazz out there. I mean, it's hard to figure out what you like. The earliest jazz was developed by African Americans in New Orleans over a century ago. Then there's swing. Bebop. Cool jazz. Soul jazz. Vocal jazz. Free jazz. Fusion, and everything in between.
And people forget, it's okay not to like everything you hear. Rock's the same way. Just because you don't like the Eagles doesn't mean you won't love Chuck Berry. You might hate Duran Duran and worship Slater Kinney. It all comes down to figuring out what speaks to you.
So to help guide you in that process, today we're offering the Rock Fan's Guide to Jazz. We're joined in the studio by writer and curator John Corbett. John's a regular contributor to Downbeat magazine, the author of the book Extended Play, as well as two upcoming books about improvised music. John, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Pleasure to be here.
You've been involved in jazz in many areas in Chicago for the last several decades. How did you get into the music in the first place?
Well, jazz was, for me, a music that I came to as a post-punk listener, really. I kind of crossed the divide in the record store first. I was a young post-punk fan listening to groups like The Slits and The Fall and The Pop Group. And one day in the record store, I looked across at the vast sea of jazz that I knew nothing about and just decided to jump in.
If you don't know where to start, it's hugely daunting, because I remember I got into it when I was in college and, you know, people kept talking about this John Coltrane character. And I figured, okay, you know, here's a kid grew up listening to like Grand Funk Railroad, you know, really sophisticated. And suddenly, you know, you hear the MC5 talking about John Coltrane and go, all right, I got to check this out. So I buy, you know, Live at the Village Vanguard 2, had no idea what I'm doing. Like, wrong place to start with John Coltrane, at least for somebody who knows nothing about it. You're coming at it from a similar perspective of what we're talking about in this show. A rock listener who came to jazz. So, in a way, we're going to learn from your mistakes, right? Finding out what jazz was all about. What turned you on? What made you think, wow, as a rock listener, this jazz stuff is really speaking to me now? Was there a light bulb moment like that for you?
Really, I think the thing that I began to understand pretty quickly and was a connection between the musics was that jazz puts an emphasis on kind of individual personal vocabulary, personal, you know, these musicians have developed something that's uniquely their own. And I could relate to that. I thought that was the thing that you tried to do as a rock musician, too. You tried to have your own feel. You tried to have your own voice. The big challenge for me, I think, which I suspect is a challenge for a lot of people, is that it's instrumental music. Not exclusively, but a lot of it is instrumental music. Right. And if you're used to listening to lyrics and kind of basing what you're doing around enjoying the lyrics and then also enjoying the riffs and the grooves and so on, that's the first order of business. And I think listening to an Ornette Coleman record early on, which was like leaping into the deep end of the pool, really turned me on because I just didn't know what it meant. I didn't know what was going on in it, but I knew I liked how it made me feel. I liked the sense of being a little bit lost in it.
Just give us a quick overview of somebody stepping into jazz in 2015. What obstacles will that person face to getting into the music that, say, maybe are different from the obstacles you may have faced as a young listener getting into it?
I think the biggest obstacle is the sense that this is fuddy-duddy music, or that this is music that's not cool. And it's sad because in a way, you know, jazz was the original hipster music.
Right.
It was the original cool music.
The original gangster music in
Absolutely.
A lot of ways.
Sure, yeah. I mean, Dizzy Gillespie was a badass. Mm-hmm. There's just no way around it. And a lot of that music from the 1940s, when the music was self-consciously becoming an art music, was also about kind of taking charge and turning these small groups into really deadly, sharp vehicles.
I'm thinking of the attitude, though, John, the preciousness.
Absolutely.
This is something to be preserved and curated and put in the museum. It's not alive. I hate that.
Yeah. I think there's not misinformation, but a sort of misattitude, exactly what you're pointing out, Jim. It's sort of this kind of crazy sense that it's a museum music or that it's already finished. That's a sensibility that you have to get over. I grew up sort of with this vague impression that jazz had something to do with Lawrence Welk when I was a kid. And I think that's the deadliest thing you could possibly think.
Yeah, it was kind of, as you said, fuddy-duddy music. So people have this impression in their heads that it's not relevant to their lives anymore. But what you're saying is that there's still danger to be found. There's still excitement to
and
be
there's
found.
Still joy. You look at, you know, it's not virtuosity uber alles. You look at that movie Whiplash, which just drove me crazy. You know, it was all about technique and no celebration of the joy of making music.
And there was nothing about jazz in that movie.
No.
Was I rushing or was I dragging?
No.
Count again.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Rushing or dragging?
Rushing.
So you do know the difference.
You never would see somebody bloodying their hands trying to play as fast as possible.
No.
There was nothing about nuance in that movie, which is ridiculous because that's what's so exciting about jazz, or that's certainly one of the most exciting things about it is the nuance. And it's also, if you're a real rock aficionado, I think that's also, you know, the differences between John Bonham's beat and Bunny Carlos's, you know, approach to rhythm are subtle and are what makes it fun.
So let's dive into the music, John. I am a jazz ignoramus. I am curious, and I'm using I correctly. I've got my two dozen, you know, I've got the Coltrane box set, I got the Mingus, you know, and I figure when I retire, then I'll spend the rest, whatever brain power is left, diving deep into jazz. But let's assume somebody has that time now. Where would you start with the rock fans? I want to dive in. I don't want to be lost like you were in the beginning. You know, send me somewhere, John.
I'm going to send you to 1956. Sonny Rollins is one of the greatest tenor saxophone players in jazz history. He was around playing in the bebop era, the end of the bebop era, and really made his mark in the 1950s and 60s. He's still alive, still playing, and still playing great. So this is a Sonny Rollins track from 1956 from a record called Saxophone Colossus. And it's a quartet with the great Max Roach on drums and Doug Watkins on bass, Tommy Flanagan on piano. It's called Strode Road. And what I think is so exciting about it and what makes it something that would be of interest to someone who's listening to rock mostly is this sense of forward propulsion. I mean, this is really moving music. And Max Roach isn't a heavy-handed drummer at all. He's a very light drummer, but he has power. One of the things that they talk about with Max Roach is that he played, quote-unquote, melodic drums. He tuned his drums very specifically, and he would add this kind of lightness of feeling to it so that it had a kind of melodic aspect. The big difference between rock rhythm and jazz rhythm has to do with this sense of feel and this sense of swing.
Yeah.
But really, having a sense of swing isn't just a matter of varying the beat. It's actually a very complicated thing, but you know it when you feel it, and it moves you along, and it's a little bit different. And I think it's there at the... It's been pulled back down to its essence in rock rhythm. I mean, rock music has jazz also in its history, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, jump blues, you know, that goes back to swing.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house.
The evolution of these genres has happened in some ways dovetailing, coming back together and moving apart.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue the Rock Fan's Guide to Jazz with writer John Corbett. And later on, I'll drop a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.